We're very lucky here in Springfield because we have a really superior instrument. When the instrument was realized in the early 1960s, Mr. Robert Stewart, who was president of the Park Board, gave a lot of thought to implementing this bequest in the most thoughtful way. So we're really grateful because it's a fantastic set of bells. Just a little sideline, when this carillon was cast in 1961, it was the heaviest and largest carillon that the 300-year-old firm of Pettit & Fritzen from the Netherlands had ever cast. So they put a lot of care and, I dare say, love into it. And that's why the bells are really so beautiful.
You mentioned the bequest, and I just wanted to touch on the history and how Springfield came to have a carillon named for Thomas Rees. Could you just recap how it came to be that Washington Park has that iconic tower there?
Mr. Rees is really literally one of my great heroes. He was an extraordinary Victorian gentleman, born in 1850. Dies in 1933. In 1922, he travels to Europe. He visits Antwerp Cathedral. There's a very famous carillon there. And he writes a very beautiful, compelling poem in the visitor's book. And we believe it was at that moment, or probably before, he fell in love with carillons. Now, 11 years later, in 1933, he writes his last will and testament 6 months before his death, and he leaves the city of Springfield, actually the Park District and Pleasure Drive Corporation, the sum of $200,000 in 1933, which is
a lot back then.
A lot. I mean, in today's dollars, Peter, that amounts to almost $3.7, $4 million for a carillon. So it's his vision, his passion, his love of bells that we are fortunate to literally have one of the top instruments in the world.
I'm speaking with Robin Austin, carillonneur with the Springfield Park District, talking about the 52nd Annual International Carillon Festival coming up this weekend and all of next week, with nightly concerts, 7 to 8:30, except for Wednesday. And you're inviting carillonneurs from around the world, around the country and around the world. Could you talk about what you have planned for them?
Absolutely. So our festival kicks off on Sunday, this Sunday at 3 p.m. We actually have 13 carillonneurs playing 12 programs. Six of those 13 are actually students. So we're very excited this year to inaugurate a student recital. We launched a student program back in September when I arrived. And we have two recitals, as you said earlier, each evening. I'm playing the opening recital Sunday evening, and we'll have a great, great roster of players, among them Ari Abinus, who is literally one of the most famous players and most distinguished players in the world, Carol Gitling Lenz from the University of Denver, Magalosha Fibig, who is also from the Netherlands, as is Ari. Two younger carillonneurs who are new to the profession but are just amazing musicians, Brian Tang from the University of California at Berkeley, and Margaret Pan, who actually began her career studying with me at Princeton University. Most recently, she's actually studied at the Royal Carillon School in Mechelen, Belgium. So, you know, this is our 52nd festival. And in those 52 years, we have featured 156 carillonneurs from literally around the world. Europe, New Zealand, Australia, Canada. We even had a South American player many years ago. So the international flavor continues. I'm really proud of that and really grateful to all the folks who make this happen.
How is the art of playing a carillon regarded around the world? You mentioned that international flavor, but how is it considered around the world? And I suppose, how is it kept alive in all of these different countries? How is this knowledge kind of passed down, I guess?
It's a great question, Peter, and I can tell you there are only 650 carillons in the world. Now, in spite of that small number, there is a thriving culture of the carillon. Here in North America, we have a guild, and we have an annual meeting, we publish music, we support one another. So that certainly is a big part of us continuing this great tradition. There are university programs here in the U.S. who teach the carillon. There are not very many. Most of us study privately. And that was one reason why I wanted to launch a teaching program here, as I had in Princeton. I can tell you in Europe, there is a long, distinguished history, obviously. When I have students come to tour, we have literally every third grader in Springfield at some point. We try to get to visit the carillon. And I always say to them, how do you folks learn about news? And everybody says, oh, the internet, or we read the newspaper. Well, in the 1500s, folks learned about news because of bells, because of the carillonneur in the tower. He was ringing out news. He was ringing out danger. Carillons are thriving in Europe as they have for the last 500 years. They're played on market day. When I was a student in France, in Douai, we had to play every Saturday for about an hour and a half while people shopped, because they'd been doing it since probably 1400 or 1500 or more. So that's how the traditions continue. It's a little different here in the U.S. We're lucky, because of our park setting. People come and they bring picnics and they take leisurely walks, and that's how they experience the carillon here. So it's different. It's different, but it's as wonderful.
How is Springfield doing with the upkeep of this carillon? Are we doing everything that we need to do to make sure that this instrument is able to play for, you know, generations to come?
The Park District, in partnership with the Rees Carillon Society, we've been great stewards of this instrument. In other words, over the years, we've updated the instrument, we've updated the keyboards, we've updated the playing action, and as recently as 2 years ago, we did an extensive renovation of the upper belfry, and there were many reasons for that, the first of which was we had some structural problems with the original steel. As you might imagine, after 50 years, things wear out, and our steel was... There was some structural problems with the steel, so we had to replace that work. But I can say without hesitation that we are just doing a wonderful job taking care of this instrument. And the recent work that we've done really puts us in the position to that it will be in great shape for the next 50, even 100 years.
I've been speaking with Robin Austin, who is going to be hosting the 52nd Annual International Carillon Festival. And Robin, I just wanted to ask finally, is there one particular piece that you're especially looking forward to playing yourself or hearing one of your guest artists performing?
There's so much great music. There's so many great arrangements of things that'll be familiar to folks, great folk songs, great standards, great classics, and a lot of terrific original carillon music, literally spanning several hundred years. Two performances I'm excited about. Wouter van Klemput, who is a renowned Dutch composer, he wrote a piece for two carillonneurs, and that will be performed by Ari Abanis and Nicolosia Thijbig. It's called Orthodoxia and should be quite extraordinary, so that's very exciting. And I will be premiering a piece by my friend and Philadelphia composer David Gottlieb called Let Sleeping Cats. And it's a fun piece. It's a different piece. It's a little atonal with some irregular rhythms, but it really shows off the range of the carillon. David has literally used every bell of our beautiful 67 bell carillon, so it will be new, some new and different sounds coming out of the tower. But again, we have a wide range of performances, so that should be a lot of fun.